We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Women's World Championship bonus edition of Perpetual Chess. And we have one of my favorite guests and one of my dear friends joining us. More importantly, she's the two-time U.S. Women's Champion, an award-winning podcaster and author of the classic Chess Queens and of the forthcoming Play Like a Champion and eventually Thinking Sideways. She's also a commentator, including for chess.com, for the final two games of the Women's World Championship match. So the match is fresh in her mind. All of the drama is, and I'm pleased to welcome back to the program, Jennifer Shahadi. Welcome, Jen.
Hey, thank you so much, Ben. It's really fun to be here, as you know, this match certainly captured my imagination.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I got the feeling, especially in the second half, that a lot of people really got into the match. And I certainly enjoyed it. And of course, people listening probably know, but we should probably report just in case, that Zhu Wenjun won in dramatic fashion. She wins 300,000 euros. She's now the four-time champion, joining the likes of Vera Menchik, Nona Gaprindashvili, Maya Chabordinzi, Zijun, and Hoyi Fen as the sixth player to win the title four times or more. So came back, won to even the score, and then we had a couple draws. They were all really well played, and then goes down to the last game. And Jen, I know that you at some point thought that we were going to have a playoff. At what point did you start to think, wait a minute, maybe there's not going to be a playoff after all?
Oh, that's a really great question. I mean, honestly, me and Jovanka Hauska, who I was doing the commentary with on chess.com, and all the producers, we all were like, 80, 90% that we're going to have a playoff tomorrow. I already had my alarm set for the middle of the night and Saturday night, because it just seemed like with no rest day between the playoffs and the 12 classical games, that it would be like a smart thing. You know, you make a slightly quicker draw than usual. You have a little bit of time to prepare for the most important rapid and blitz games of your life. So we all really expected this. But then the opening was so wild. Already we were like, okay, I mean, definitely our opinion on the position kept flip-flopping. You know, white's winning, black's better, white's better. So I think once the opening came out, we were pretty clear it wasn't going to be a quick draw. So just it was so imbalanced. If you guys, if some of the listeners didn't see the game, you know, black had this huge center and white had a beautiful protected passed pawn, a4, b5, just not your typical draw. The middle game got even more fiery as we saw a very interesting imbalance. One of my favorite imbalances, actually. I love the imbalance of two pieces for a rook and a pawn. I think it's very rich. I have a six-year-old, Fabian, who loves chess. And I feel like I'm always trying to explain to him why when you have a knight on g5 and a bishop c4. You don't want to just go knight takes f7 and, you know, trade off your two minors for a rook and a pawn. So it's something that I find really interesting. One of my favorite victories of my own was against Grandmaster Eugene Perelstein, where I had that imbalance in an endgame and I had the rook, and the rook dominated. So I felt like the whole game had all of these rich lessons to tell us. And as we saw, the women were there to fight. Well, eventually I got to turn off that alarm for the middle of the night on Saturday.
Yeah, it was quite entertaining. And I will say, I felt like the first, like, I felt like maybe the quality went down a tiny bit in game 12, especially early in the game. I kind of felt like once it reached the end game, it was clinical by the champion. But prior to that, I felt like things were a little sloppy, maybe nerves seeped in early in the game. But yeah, it was so imbalanced that you really did see that they came to play and maybe you wouldn't have a playoff after all, but fun to watch.
Oh, it was so wonderful. I mean, I was really looking forward to a playoff. Even though the wake-up call is very difficult, I have to say every time I do chess commentary like that, I have great appreciation for all the graveyard shift workers all over the world, because it's really very difficult on the nervous system. I mean, it's not just hard because you have to wake up. I think, like, psychologically, it's very difficult because of, like, your serotonin levels and light levels. So I appreciate being able to sympathize, but it's really hard, but it's so worth it to watch this type of chess and to call the action with the Jovanka. And in particular, I was looking forward to the playoff. But if you had told me that we would have a positional masterpiece to determine the Women's World Championship, I'd say, forget the playoff. Let's take the positional masterpiece. Because this game was in my eyes, just like a flawless demonstration by Ju Wenjun. Yes, few mistakes, sure, maybe in the opening, whatever. But just the fact that the technical aspect of the game was so incredibly instructive, I think it's really inspirational to a lot of kids of all genders, but of course, girls and women in particular. You know, Judit Polgár inspires everyone to be more aggressive, to play attacking openings. And I think yesterday, or whenever this episode is airing, that game 12, I think, is going to inspire a lot of people to, you know, deepen their understanding of positional chess, that you can win an endgame with your opponent barely making any mistakes because you understand the position better.
Yeah, yeah, it was fascinating seeing the two knights outplay the rook and I really admired, I mean, and for listeners who didn't see the game, I'd say it's definitely worth watching a game recap of the decisive game in particular. I think Jen might be doing one on her channel, possibly by the time this comes out. But for a weaker player like me, her patience. So she won the d5 pawn, but she didn't take it right away. She made sure she waited until she could keep rooks on the board at the point that she took the pawn. And that moment to me was very instructive, as well as the rerouting of the knight in particular when she played the knight to b1 to get it to c3 to sit on that pawn. Those two moments really stood out and I found quite instructive.
Beautifully said. I love the knight b1 maneuver. I mean, it, for those of you who didn't see the game, she rerouted her knight from d2 to b1 to c3 with a black pawn on c4 and d5. So this is, like, actually the iconic example of a blockade knight, an outpost knight, because the knight does a beautiful job of preventing the c pawn from promoting while also aggressively attacking the pawn on d5. And actually, I remember as, like, a teenager, early 20s, reading a Dovoretsky book, or perhaps getting a lesson from Gregory Kaidanov, and somebody telling me that position's winning for white when you get the knight on c3 with the pawn on c4, when the black pawn's on c4 and you get the white knight on c3. So it was beautiful to see how she executed that. And I know it's a little bit silly to teach a six-year-old that, but I tried to explain it to Fabian.
How did it go?
Like, why is that a good move? And, you know, hey, why not? Why not try? Sometimes these things stay imprinted in the brain. And I'm glad you mentioned the other moment where she played rook to c1 in order to protect her knight on c3 and then move her other knight to f4 to capture on d5 to win the pawn on d5 without trading rooks. That was a sensational scheme. And I think it's very logical. Sometimes in chess, it's easy to calculate so much that you forget your logic. But what is the logic here? Black had two rocks. White had one rock. It's better to have one of a type of piece because it can do some really important damage, whereas two of a piece can be redundant. So of course she wants to keep the one rock, right? And it's just like this pure logic that seems so obvious. It's like, oh, a beginner can understand that. But you know what? When you're at the board, you know, masters, international masters, grandmasters can easily lose sight of that kind of thing. And so to see Ju Wenjun execute it so perfectly when she was playing for all the marbles, it's epic.
Yeah. And of course, the mistake that set up that whole sequence, the moving the pawn to E5 and weakening the black chain, that in itself was an instructive moment. And just from that point forward, perfect capitalization again by the world champion. And of course, a lot of people weighed in with congratulations. Rafael Letao, who did a great job doing the annotations and all of the write-ups for chess.com, concluded that it was a tense and difficult match that was played at a very high level by both players. Anish Giri tweeted, "Congratulations to Ju Wenjun for retaining her title. What made this match particularly interesting for me to follow, amongst other things, was the high level of preparation," which I think is a good segue to what I found super fascinating. Shout out to the chess superstar, Fabian, here joining us on the podcast. Can he hear us?
Yeah, he can hear, yeah.
Okay, because I always have my ear pods in, so if my kids come, they can't hear. So yeah, Fabian, we're talking about the World Chess Championship, the Women's World Chess Championship, which just concluded. And yeah, so when Begum and I discussed the first half of the match, we speculated a lot about what openings would be seen. And because they played so many openings in the second half, we managed to be right at the same time that we were wrong, because we had Caro Kanz, we had D4 variants, we had a Sicilian. That was definitely something, as highlighted by Anish Giri, fun to watch the different openings, but also it's impressive that a player like Anish was so struck by the preparation.
Yeah. So I felt really excited to see what opening was going to take place each day. I mean, particularly I was following the action on chess.com before I hopped in the booth. They had Judit Polgar and Alexander Kostyniuk. They had Danya do a couple rounds and Jovanka hosted it all. And what struck me is these duos with Jovanka and Judit, right? Well, first, we get a Sicilian by Ju Wenjun when Judit is doing the commentary. And I'm like, oh, this is so great. And then the next round, Jovanka literally like jumps out of her chair. She's so excited. Oh my God. The next time that Ju Wenjun gets black, she's so excited. I've never seen somebody so excited to see her Caro Kanz.
Yeah, she of course wrote the book on the Caro Kanz. So
exactly. And for you to, of course, it's the exact opposite. It's like, come on, why didn't you move the pawn two squares? Okay, but that game was very exciting, actually. That Caro Kanz was not exactly a snooze fest. I mean, none of the games were snooze fests in this world championship match.
Yeah, and the Caro Kanz, I mean, I found it interesting because in just in reviewing Ju Wenjun's primary repertoire, I hadn't highlighted it as something we were likely to see. But then they asked Lei Tingzhe after the game, you know, did you expect the Caro Kanz? And she said, well, she did play it a couple of weeks ago, so I kind of did. So it was funny that it shows that obviously she's better prepared than I am, for example.
Well, Lei Tingzhe certainly earned a lot of new fans from this. I mean, she had fans before, but I mean, I think a lot of her fans become super fans, and then people who didn't know her as well. There was just so many things to like about her. I mean, not just her style of play, but also her expressions, like just really showing like kind of the emotions that a chess player goes through. And then some of the, you know, kind of like witty remarks in the press conferences. Like she was just a lot of fun. And I can't wait to see her games in the future.
Yeah, extremely upbeat. She had a lot of comments that got clipped that were just like, you know, what do I have to worry about? I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but what do I have to worry about in the world? I get to play chess. If you play chess, you're doing what you love and so on, and just always smiling. So I had seen enough of, read enough of what she'd said and seen enough clips that I, similar to what you say, I was a fan going in, but I'm definitely even a bigger fan now, and hope she can make it to another world championship. I was hoping, it makes me slightly disappointed that she's not in the Women's World Cup, which of course is coming shortly, and Ju Wenjun is playing, which I always feel like the champion should rest and the challenger should get back out there, but that's not how it's currently lined up.
No rest for Juwen Jun. Yeah, you got your favorite tournament coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Our interview will probably come out after an epic preview that we did. But yeah, I'm excited both for the Open and for the Women's. It should be fascinating to see all the openings and all the champions in action. But so bringing it back to this match, so what else stands out to you, Jen? I mean, the opening preparation, as Anish highlighted, I found to be quite impressive. And then it was reported that Wei Yi was also on the champion's team, on Zhu Wenjun's team. It's impressive to me. And then I saw someone tweet that she had a deeper, more serious team, possibly, than Ding Liren did. I mean...
Yeah, that is extraordinary. I mean, but it also... It also kind of goes back to something that I wrote about in Chess Queens, that there is a lot of support in China for the top women players, and a lot of the entire country getting behind, of course, like Jia Jun, who started it all, this chess revolution in China, and up till now. I mean, I think it's fantastic to see. I mean, one thing I think that kind of came to light with this world championship was the idea. I saw a tweet from Grandmaster Maurice Ashley about, you know, what about the prize fund? In the future, are we going to see prize funds that are more equitable in the Open World Championship and the Women's World Championship? $500,000 euros at stake, nothing to sneeze at. But when you start adding in the taxes, the training team, so much time that you have to spend to prepare this match, you can see how it's clearly not just about the money for the players, right? It goes way deeper than that. And the World Championship really coincided with a big announcement from Norway Chess that they're going to have a Super Women's Tournament alongside Norway Chess, which is going to have exactly the same prize funds for the women as for the Open. So I think this is something we're going to be hearing about a lot more, because, you know, you see the way they work, how seriously they take it, the time, and you question, hey, I mean, maybe these prize funds need to be more equitable.
Yeah, certainly. I certainly think that they should be. And it'll be interesting to see how this progresses, how the Norway tournament is received, and like whether, because I know that, like, I think the top young women players, unfortunately, seem to move away from chess more often than top young male players. So we would hope that over the long haul that this would start to change that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, usually the argument is like, well, and I write about this in Chess Queens too. The argument is, well, women can play in the open section too. So that makes it okay for the prize funds to be like extremely different. And honestly, for a lot of years, I thought that that was a reasonable argument. But I think as I've matured, I kind of see the other side of it as well, that at the end of the day, you're also paying people for their time and their entertainment value. It's about like all the labor that goes into playing this chess. And like now chess is such big business. It's not just about like looking at someone's rating. And so much more goes into it than that, right? And to take these great women players and just like always like put it in that kind of framing ends up becoming like really negative, not only for the conversation, but also for their pocketbooks, which is not what we want.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I understand the arguments from both sides as well. But to me, it's just, we've reached this point where what we're doing, to my mind, has not been as effective as it could be, especially through the broad sweep of chess history. I feel like over the past 10 years, things are maybe slowly moving in the right direction. But changes like this give us an opportunity to gauge the impact that they can have, and then we can proceed from there. But in the meantime, it's obviously a boon to have opportunities like the Norway tournament coming up is a boon to the professionals of the chess world, and obviously primarily to the women players. But we look at something like some of the men who are working on their teams, and they get opportunities from it as well. And if it grows the visibility of chess overall, that's a win for everyone.
Exactly. I totally agree. I mean, more women in chess is definitely just like good for the game, good for everyone. Well, you're not going to be surprised to hear me say that.
Right.
When you talk about the sweep of women in chess and history, I also really want to go back to something you said very early on about how Zhu Wenjun now joins this elite club of women who've won four or more world championships. And, you know, it's interesting interesting because with a lot of those women, they were just like dominant when it comes to rating over their competitors. Like, of course, Vera Menchik, you know, pre-FIDE ratings, but she was just so much better than all of her rivals of the time, right? And then there was also Nona Gaprindishvili, also a pretty big gap, right? And Ho Yifan, of course, Maya Chibrodanidze. I'm not sure about Chibrodanidze's. I think there were more competitors. And of course, that was a time when the Polgars were coming up as well. And obviously, they didn't play in women's tournaments in the beginning. But certainly in the case of Ho Yifan, Nona Gaprindishvili, and Vera Menchik, you see this like big, big gap, right? And I think that what's interesting is Ju and Jun winning four times when there's so many people of pretty similar rating level as her. I mean, that's kind of extraordinary. I mean, it kind of does go into that question that it's like, this is more than rating, right?
Yeah.
There's something about the match preparation and the match format that she is excelling at.
Yeah. And at this point, maybe her experience is sort of like an advantage that compounds over time. And in these tense moments, she's able to handle her nerves better because it's so hard to get there and she's guaranteed to be in the match. Whereas other people, you know, they have to hope that things break right. And then they may or may not have the experience. Like I'm sure Lei Tingjie, she'll take a ton away from this match, but it's no guarantee that you get another chance. So it'll be interesting. So as we wrap up this conversation about the match itself, while I have you, Jen, we might as well quiz you before you go about your projects. But on the topic of the match itself, it's early, but I always go straight to the next cycle. So is there anyone you would be particularly watching out for as the next potential challenger?
Wow. I mean, there's so many players I would like to see. You know, obviously it would be great one day to have an American challenger. We've seen like a real rapid ascent from Alice Lee, haven't we?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if like the next championship is the destiny. But I would certainly like to see that in the future. What about you? Is there anyone that kind of you're like jonesing to see a match?
Yeah, I mean, someone like Aline Rober is also in a similar vein. Obviously, she's a few years older than Alice Lee, but still seems like it might be early. So I would go back to Goryachkina. Or, of course, being the newly minted, you know, Lei Tingjie fanboy, I would love to see a rematch if it breaks that way.
I also really like, I mean, I feel like it's kind of with the amount that the Indian women have achieved in chess, it's kind of sad that they've never had a women's world champion, right?
I mean, yeah.
You know, Harika is amazing. She's just such a great role model in chess. Like, she's so awesome. Of course, Tanya, not quite on the same level. She's not a grandmaster, but she's just like such an international icon. I mean, honestly, like, in my view, one of the great commentators in the sport. And then, of course, there's Humpy Canero, right?
Yeah.
Who is just, is outstanding, you know, actually got the grandmaster title at a younger age than Judit Polgar, right? When she just an extraordinary player who is kind of bummed that she was never women's world champion, by the way. And you know, her timing was a little off because she kept fighting for it when Ho Yifan was playing for the titles, you know, so that was a bit difficult. So I think that's the only reason she never prevailed for the crown. So I would actually like to see an Indian player fight for the world women's championship title in a head-to-head match, because I think they deserve it. And maybe it'll be one of the younger Indian players as well, but I would like to see, obviously, America, and I would like to see India as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously, chess is thriving there. Mr. Dodgy and I discussed Ayam Vaishali, Pragananda's sister. She's certainly a rising star in her own right and someone that could potentially make some noise in coming years. So, Jen, we need to take a break to hear from our sponsors. But if you're up for it, when we get back, we'll catch up on your like 12 books that you're writing and 50 commenting gigs and YouTube channel and everything else. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay, we'll be right back. And we are back. So, Jen, we know I happen to get a peek that your book may be coming in November. Is this rumor true?
It is. Play Like a Champion. And I mean, according to the Amazon page, it's actually somehow going head to head with the release date of your book. So birthday twins.
Non-Prime members can save on shipping.
Oh, good point.
But yeah, we'll see. Both, I mean, these things can be fluid. So yeah, both of us have November 1 release dates for now, but those things can move around. Right now, mine is still on schedule. I'm not saying it's delayed or anything, but it's just I wouldn't count on it on either book necessarily being that exact day, but I'm certainly going to get my pre-order in and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too. I'm really psyched for it as well. Play Like a Champion. It's a book with 700 chess puzzles. So it's a bit of an homage actually to another famous chess book by Edith Baird, who wrote a book called 700 Problems. And much in the fashion of Play Like a Girl, it is puzzles from like the top female players. And it's quite more difficult than Play Like a Girl. So that's like really one of the twists. And also the other difference is that I really wrote it with the eye to all genders. So, you know, being the mom of a six-year-old boy who loves chess, I now really see the importance of not just teaching girls about the great games of both women and men, but teaching everyone that, because it's important to show boys, to show men that the games of women are really important too.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. So what level would you say the material is like primarily geared toward?
It's a pretty wide range. It's almost like playing Puzzle Rush. Like there will be some things in there that a pretty new player can find, but there's also going to be some things that you're going to scratch your head over. I mean, I've got compositions in there by Yosha. So like there's that kind of wide range that I think is really doable in a puzzle book format, because you put it on your shelf when you're 1,000, maybe you can't read the last few chapters, but you'll be able to in a year or so.
Right. And this is FM Yosha Iglesias, who sometimes posts her puzzles on Twitter, and they're no joke. They're not easy. So so yeah, that tells you that it would be a wide range of puzzles indeed, but definitely something to look forward to. And then you've got your YouTube channel now. What's the plan for that, Jen?
Well, the reason for the YouTube channel is that, you know, my little guy, Fabian, and I are, you know, studying a lot of chess together. And eventually we are going to co-author a book called How to Beat Your Mom at Chess. So this YouTube channel is At Your Mom at Chess, and it's kind of documenting that journey as I go over some great games and some, you know, great tactical themes, and I teach Fabi along the way. And of course, I feel like a lot of new chess players out there, that they really do want things to be kind of explained in a basic way. And I've always enjoyed that. I always think like my favorite thing about chess is that you can explain things at many levels at once, you know? And so that's what the channel is about. And it's just so fun to do the project with my son. I have to say, I've worn so many hats in chess over the years, commentator, player, author, and being a chess mom is such a blast. So much fun.
Yeah. I was getting a little jealous. We were talking before we were recording. So Jen's son Fabian is 6. As I've mentioned periodically, my kids are 7 and 10, and they know how to play. But so far, they're not really interested in tournaments, unfortunately.
Well, you wouldn't be jealous when your son came home and said, "Mommy, I want you to teach me the London."
Right. That's funny. And one last thing we should mention, Jen, it's always great to catch up. As we record this on Sunday, July 23rd, the unfortunate news broke that Isabella Choco, it was reported today, I believe, that she passed away. Of course, she was featured in Ladies Night episode 33 and a follow-up with chess.com. More importantly, she was a Holocaust survivor, 1956 French women's champion, a French chess Olympiad, just a remarkable story, incredibly inspiring woman. And I was so sad to see that news. And Jen, what was your reaction?
It was really just really sad. And, you know, 94 years old, shocking, because I just saw her in Paris, like, what was it, 5 months ago. And she was just so full of life and, you know, so vibrant. I am so grateful that I took that opportunity to meet her. I'm really happy that, you know, Benji and Chandler directed the documentary, and he became obsessed with the story. And Benji really brought the story to me in the first place. That they, you know, we all realized, you know, if we want to do this, we should do this soon, you know. And I think that should be like a life lesson to people out there. Like, you know, our elders have so much to teach us, and you don't want to wait, right? Because you just got to take these opportunities. And I'm just, especially when they involve travel, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just, I don't want to be like super morose about it. Like somebody might die, but the truth is that you got to get out there, because I couldn't be more grateful to have the chance to have met her. In fact, I'll say, like, I don't speak French and she speaks some English, of course, but, you know, we couldn't really fully communicate. And I know that she could realize how much I admired her and she wanted to be able to connect with me. So she did something she almost never does. She hasn't done this almost in any interview. She played chess with me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she hasn't played chess in recent years and certainly not in interviews. She played maybe like 10, 15 years ago in some like French league games. But in the last couple of years, she hasn't. And it was just this ability to communicate. You know, she was laughing. It was also like the first game, you could see she was a little rusty. But by the second game, like her level improved like 10x.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool to see as well. Like just like the fighter come back within like a matter of minutes. And it just, I think it shows a lot about her character that like, even though this was supposed to be all about her, she saw that like, I just like was dying to connect with her. And she was like, okay, let's bring out the chess set. Let's play.
That's great. Yeah, that's a wonderful story. And again, for anyone who has not heard Jen's interviews with Mishoko, you absolutely must listen to it. And you say you're glad you did it. And the chess world as a whole should be glad that you and Benjamin Porteau and everyone who helped you contributed to this story, because it's just truly inspiring.
It really is. I mean, you know, it's just she speaks so eloquently about fighting against evil, fighting for freedom. And one of the really beautiful things that she says is she's not religious herself, but she believes in the beauty of family and specifically her parents. So even though her father died in the ghetto and her mother died in the death camp, sadly, just a few weeks before she was rescued, when she was only 14 years old, she carried with that love with her whole life. Like that was like something that gave her life so much meaning. And I mean, it's breathtaking to see like a woman in her 90s say that like her parents are still with her after she wasn't able to see them for so many years because of that evil. And it just goes to show you how important that lineage is and how what you give to young people can stay with them into their old age. It's very beautiful. It's eternal. It's that love is eternal. And that's yeah. Like kind of what I got out of her.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace to Isabella Choco. Life well lived, despite obviously what she endured. Well, Jen, always great to catch up. Anything to add before we say goodbye?
No, just a huge pleasure to be here as always. And yeah, thanks to everybody who's been so passionate about watching the Women's World Chess Championship. It's like, it's a dream come true to see so many more people rally around women's chess and the importance of it. And I know it's only going to get better in the next few years because the energy is there and because of the great players themselves.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, absolutely thrilling match. And yeah, I can't wait for the next one. And thank you, Jen, for helping share your wisdom and your experience discussing this high-level chess.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Thanks.
Well, I thought that was really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Podcast Network.